So how do we start?
Hey, it's Aga and Werner, and this is Catching the Next Wave podcast, where we discuss the future of design. Today, we are super happy to talk to Rudy Jansen, the co-creator of the Event Design Canvas, the tool that will help any event creator to prepare an awesome event, and the co-author of the book Event Design, where you can read how to design awesome events using the canvas. Rudy's Dutch, living in Switzerland, where together with his two business partners, Rolf Friesen and Dennis Lauer, they run an event design collective. Rudy says about himself that he's an event junkie, so if you want to know what makes an event a great one, he is the person to ask. Rudy, many people go to events only to be disappointed. Bad coffee and stale cakes? What's wrong with the events today?
Well, there's nothing wrong with the events. There's only one thing wrong with them, and that's how we create them. So thanks, Aga and Werner, for hosting this podcast. I'm particularly geeky about events. I'm an event addict. I go to many events in many different places across the planet. There are some really, really good events, but there's a much larger chunk of very mediocre events, and there's an even larger chunk of very poor events. Now, the cure and the pain that's there, I think, is in the creation. I think the way we create events is broken. And I saw it dawn in the eyes, literally, of many people over years. But, you know, when I was in a hotel, I saw people with their meetings coming in, with their events and their intents. And we would have this Pinocchio nose, you know, we could kind of tell, like, okay, is this team going to make it a mediocre event, a poor event, or a fantastic event? And we would just know. I don't know how we knew, but we developed this sixth sense to kind of know whether events would be good or not. And I kept seeing this over and over and over and over again. And you can tell the amount of people, the amount of time, and the amount of money that goes into events when you send the invoices, right? You know how much money goes into these things. It's pretty significant. And this went from royal weddings to, you know, central bank presidents getting together for an ECOFIN conference, from, you know, any type of corporate event to association events. They all have very different dynamics. And I have a fascination for them. And when I was sent to one of the programs to become a general manager of a hotel, it dawned upon me that I didn't want to run a hotel for the rest of my life. I actually wanted to dig into the specialty of events and get to know that much better. And that's when I dove into that layer. And ultimately, when I saw that events are broken and they're at the source of where events come from, I said, we can either complain about it and keep doing that for a long time, or we could do something about it. And we decided to do the latter. Hence came out the Event Design Collective.
A while back, I had to host a small event, in quotes, for my team. You're addressing this in your book as well, but why should I host the event? When is the right time to bring an event into play?
Great question. And this is on the mind of many business owners, people that want to deliver some kind of change, somehow, sometime, think about, we should get these people together. Nothing has ever changed on the planet unless you bring a group of people together. Wars can be started by guns, but they get stopped by conversations. The whole point behind this is that if you bring people together, you can create change. And everybody knows that instinctively. But the problem you were feeling, Werner, is the problem we're addressing, which is, how do you, as the event owner, articulate what behavior change you want from whom and how it is that you could deliver that behavior change for them? When it becomes spaghetti and complex in your head is when you're trying to articulate what does that behavior look like when they walk into the event and how does it look when they walk away from the event. The cookies in the middle, the money you spend for them to be there in the room together, that's the thing holding you back, luckily, from doing it instinctively and just going forward. And what the impact of that behavior would change would be after the meeting has been concluded. If you're not clear about the gain that you get from an event or the expected return versus the commitment of time you put into the event to make it work, if you don't articulate what jobs need to get done as a result of people having been to the event, if you don't know what you're promising them beyond the stale cookies and coffee, if you don't know what your money you're spending and what you're expecting in return and revenues, what their expectations are and what you're expecting to get back from them and their level of satisfaction, then basically you haven't done your homework and you cannot plan for the experience journey to take place or to know what the instructional design is of your meeting or what the prototype is of what you're putting together. And so this is what we've tried to decode with this thing called the Event Canvas, which is really a year's worth of thinking crammed into a piece of paper so you can get everybody on the same page.
Rude is a guy who knows about events. Then I think about a conference that I'm going to, a meeting that my company sets up where all the important people get together. But those lines are starting to blur, right? Like, what is an event in your mind?
Our definition of an event is quite simple. You need at least two stakeholders, and there needs to be some behavior change. If you have those two ingredients, you have an event. So your definition of an event is basically changing something in the intended desired direction of change. If you're spending money on stale cookies and cold coffee and don't know where the behavior will change, right, in which direction it might change, or if you just leave it open, let's just get together and we'll see where we end up, next. That's pretty serendipitous. And yes, you could do that and see if any unplanned things will happen and if some of the behavior might change. That's great. But if you ask anybody, any business person or somebody that spends time on something, the time quotient of an event is a very simple calculatory measure. Werner, you were talking about that event you were thinking of putting together for your team. How many people in the team?
13.
How long were you thinking of getting them together for?
A day.
And I'll do a quick calculation because I would say 13 times 8, right, is 104. So if you're spending 104 man hours of people together during the one day, and I multiply that by 0.01, right, 1%, do you think it would make sense to think about what that meeting should be doing for at least 1 hour in order to make sure that the 104 hours you're spending with your team is spent properly?
Makes 100% sense. Yeah.
That's what we're doing. And what we're saying is, allocate 1% of the total event time, which is the amount of people times the time you're thinking of getting them together that they commit. Think about your stake as the event owner. Think about their stake as the participant to that event. Think about the entry exit behaviors. Go through the exercise of empathizing with those people. And I guarantee you, just by thinking about it, one condition, don't do it just by yourself. Get a team of people to think with you. If you put 5-6 minds to this, or even 2 or 3, but the Dunbar number 7 is a magic number. When you get 7 people in a room to go through a process and think about what that event should do, the outcomes and the prototypes that you come up with will be so radically cool and different because different brains think about the problem. And this is where I say you don't need me or Raul or Dennis or anybody else from the Event Design Collective. As such, what you need to master is the process, how to go through it. Because if you can activate the brain of the other people to go through the process systematically, you can analyze one stakeholder in less than an hour and come up with prototype solutions from an idea quarantine to come up with a much better event than you ever thought of at first. The problem you do have is that the idea you had about the event, Werner, is the idea that you fell in love with as the event owner. And we're going to have to make you fall out of love with that idea first by coming up with other prototypes.
Kill your precious ones, right? Get rid of those ones that you really cling on to.
Yeah. And the only way to do that is by articulating options, right? From a user-centric perspective. Again, this all comes from design thinking. It's not rocket science. Only the problem with the event is it only happens when the stakeholders are together at that moment in time. There is usually no general rehearsal. There's just the final performance.
One comment I want to make, and maybe this is for you very obvious, right? For you, maybe too, Aga, but I think we miss this sometimes. I had an opportunity to speak to one of your highly certified people, Miranda Duff, and she's running some events of herself or whatever. And then in conversation with her, I realized the mistake of some of the events that I've been involved with. There's a huge difference between the people who are doing the logistics in the event and the people actually planning the event. This is where you come in.
Yeah. The thing that comes out of an event design process is a narrative. So what you're doing is you are looking at a behavior change piece that is in somebody's head, but might not be clearly articulated yet. But you know that they have the notion of what it should be. It's the art and science of a group of people to then question and validate the thinking, empathize with that person to try and articulate what that person sees, thinks, hears, says, does, pains, gains. The empathy mapping is the core ingredient to extract the only one thing that we work with, which is the behavior. The say and do part is the only thing that I can observe with a camera. All the other stuff I'm conscious of, but I can work with it when I'm thinking about how people learn or what experiences they go through. But to measure the ROI you were talking about before, the only thing I can observe is their actual behavior. It's what they say and do. So if the camera cannot see that part of the outcome, it doesn't exist as far as we're concerned. And I think this is where you can make something that looks very holistic and sounds very fluffy, very tangible and very output driven. The example you were telling about, Miranda van Broek, she actually runs the events for Meeting Professionals International. Imagine that her role is to put on the World Education Congress, which is the largest gathering of meeting professionals on the planet, and she does it every year. It's the most daunting task you could imagine to have if you're looking at events. For many years, since 1992, this event, and for the last 26 editions, has gone through a certain cycle and a certain growth phase, as many events do. I think every event goes through the same kind of growth path as any human being. The first years, you grow like cabbage, and it's really exciting. You stand up, and you fall over, and you know, then you become a teenager, you become somewhat rebellious, and then at 18, you think you're all on your own, and you can drive a car. And then you're thinking about all the next things that are happening. It sounds a bit crude, but you need a motive to stand back and think about your event design again. That motive to step back appeared. Miranda came to our program at the University of Amsterdam called the Event Design Certificate Program, and everybody has to bring their own project. Miranda very proudly brought her World Education Congress under her arm, just like the other 17 people had their project. And we pick one and we work on it for 3 days. And so she can lend the brain power of all 17, 18 people in the room. And together we cracked the World Education Congress 2018 challenge, which was already defined to take place in Indianapolis. And so the budget had already been set. The destination had been selected. A lot of the variables are framed, right? Those are design restrictions that you have in place. You have the team. But here she had this window of opportunity of 3 days to get 17 other people, of which 80% of the room had no idea what MPI is, what the World Education Congress is, or what Indianapolis even looks like. So complete blank slate. And within 3 days, they cracked it. We empathized with the different stakeholders. We went through the process. They came out with four prototypes on the other end. Then she had the daunting task to bring it back to her team in Dallas. And in Dallas, she got the mandate from the CEO who said, well, this is one of our core driver business value experiences where our community gets together. It's our sweet spot. And guess what? We are meeting professionals. So we've got to stop planning meetings and start designing experiences. The tribal feeling of people wanting to get together with like-minded other people is so strong that I think events are their manifestation. Whether it's a dinner of a gathering of alumni that gets together, to me, that's the proof and power of events.
With the next wave, we understand that there's this thing called experience. But then the next wave is about how it transforms, how experience actually drives to a transformation. And Ruud, what you just mentioned, those are transformations, right? So when you start organizing these events, you have in your hands this opportunity to spark or light the fuse for a transformation, not even the experience at my event.
But do we assume that every single event should be transformational? Or what does it mean, transformational event?
Well, Aga, let me ask you this question. Think back for a moment at all the events that you went to. Which ones were transformational or pivotal moments? And if you count 100 events and think about the amounts of experiences that were, first of all, memorable, second of all, maybe transformational. Those are the ones that have the pure gold dust from your perspective. The other thing that I think dawns upon me all the time is that you can think you can create experiences, but I don't think you can. What you can do is create a context in which experiences may happen.
So you design for experience, not an experience.
Yeah, designing an experience is the wrong expression. It's designing for an experience to happen because there are a number of things that are uncontrollable, even if staged, that you need to allow to happen. And time is the magic factor. The ability to get people in the same space or the same area somehow, the same mindset, to prepare them, to disconnect them from the outside world, to get them in a certain mode of thinking together. That is ultimately what delivers, first of all, potentially the behavior change. Second of all, maybe the experience. And third of all, maybe the transformation, if so desired, right? I mean, sometimes people are not ready to change yet. You know, it took 17 climate conferences to ultimately get a signature and a mandate from a quorum of all the countries to change climate change, 17 editions, right? This is not a small event. And then even if everybody agrees with the final thing, somebody can still step back and challenge the whole thing and stop transformation. And I think this is where the willpower of people needs to be amalgamated over time and well-designed and well put together so that change can happen, maybe not faster, but at the pace in which it's designed to change.
It has a chance to happen in the first place.
We're just rebuilding our website. And remember, Aga, you and I were talking about this before. It's like, you know, designing a website for an organization is like a car crash. Unfortunately, I just had one last week. It reminded me of the situation of when a lot of stakes get together, it can feel like a car crash situation. The same goes when you put on an event. If the stakes are very high, the likelihood of things colliding is pretty big. But sometimes you have to do that in order to create progress, right? Sometimes you have to stand still to then accelerate again. And there's all sorts of repercussions you cannot predict ahead of time, which might hamper you in the short run, but will help you in the long run. It's consciously thinking about that as a team of people that's not maybe directly involved, which really helps a lot. You know, when students design events using our methodology, I'm always flabbergasted by the outcome because they're not held back by the restraint, like Werner, you were saying, of the burden of execution. They don't mind how difficult it is to get the budget. They don't mind how difficult it is to convince the event owner. They don't mind finding the right venue and putting the stale cookies and cold coffee on the table. They don't care about how difficult or easy that is, which allows you to think very freely. And that's the exact mindset that works best when you do event design. However, and this is our next kind of thing, is how do you convert a design of, you know, holistic thinking into an actionable, deliverable, pragmatic, executionable thing, and then assess whether it's delivering on what it's supposed to do. This is actually what we were testing with our team at the World Education Congress in 2018 in Indianapolis. We documented the whole journey, not just from ourselves as 9 people from the Event Design Collective, but we asked others to document their ethnographic journey of their experience journey and learnings from the before, during, and after the event. Yeah, I think we had 130, 140 people who were our experience experiment test pilots who literally documented their journeys, and we harvested that information from various stakeholder perspectives, now giving us evidence-based data, pictures, opinions about how they experienced the event, which will give the feeding, the Petri dish, and the blood sample for what does the 2022 edition look like 4 years from today? If you want to think really freely, you don't think of your next event, you think of one that's 4 or 5 years down the line. So thinking in decades, looking back, zooming out from Google Street View on how your event delivers value and changes the culture in your organization, that's really the focus of what we're working on now with many organizations. But people love it because the event is super tangible. I can observe the behavior, the culture for 3 days. It's like looking at a DNA sample for, you know, 72 hours. It's pretty cool.
That's really interesting. I never looked at it like that.
And the thing we tested there was actually we put up a wall with just foam boards. You know, we put 5 foam boards up, one for every decade. And we said, tell us about your memory from a past edition if you went. And the memory is actually the experience locked into the head. So what we were doing was harvesting the collective memory of 2,200 people. And some people were there for the first time. Others had been to the original one in 1992. Some had been to halfway points or others. And they might remember something that was transformational in their careers or in their personal pathways. We even came across people who got married as a result of that event. You know, talk about transformational change. People are keen to tell you about that in hindsight because they have 2020 vision. Now, the art and science is taking that history and then making it work forward. And when you put a team of people to that and you have that history, it's pretty phenomenal what you can come up with. Yeah, super exciting stuff.
What were the best and the worst events you went to?
One of the hardest events for me to do is TEDx Basel. I just recently moved here to Basel in Switzerland from the Netherlands. And TEDx was just announced in Tokyo at the time, a year before. And they were creating a way for people to take the license and bring it into their local space. In 2009, I think it was, 2010. I came on this idea to say, well, it would be pretty cool to do a general rehearsal of an event and then put on the event the next day. So use the infrastructure, right? And the idea was, how about doing a TEDx youth event like the day before, and they can use the whole infrastructure and kind of toy around with it, shadowed by people that were going to do the main events, see how they did it. And my ulterior motive as the one that initiated this thought was, I would love it if my kids would understand what I do. I think my wife doesn't understand what I do. My mother-in-law, my parents, nobody understands what we do, right? Because we're in this kind of nascent space. They see all the events, but they have no idea what we do. So that was my motive to kind of get the kids to understand what I do and see if they wanted to get involved in creating that TEDx youth event. That worked really well on a small scale. But the sad story is that TEDx Basel, the first edition, never got off the ground, however hard I tried, because there was some kind of resistance to having this flavor from abroad brought into the local scene and trying to set up something that doesn't exist here, that comes from some foreign land, which is very interesting. So that's, I think for me, a flop was putting on the first TEDx Basel because it never happened as such. We did have the general rehearsal with the kids, which was a blast in a very small scale. And only a number of years later did TEDx Basel take off. Right? So sometimes change cannot be forced or creativity cannot be forced. That was a big learning for myself. The College of Extraordinary Experiences to me is a window to the future of where events could be headed. If people are more experimental and letting go of their normal selves or their normal status quo and immerse into a completely different world. So I think that's like an extreme type of event.
On the Extraordinary College, all three of us have been. Maybe like a little brief explainer of the college itself.
The whole idea behind the college, for those who don't know, is to immerse people into an experience, which is about designing experiences. Together with Paul, Paul is the spiritus movens behind the college. We are trying to figure out how we can help people to understand what the experience design thing is all about by putting them through an experience. We came up with two exercises. The warm-up exercise was about designing an experience for a goblin because the college is set up in a castle and castles obviously have goblins. And the curious thing, which I don't think that we really envisioned and it happened, is that goblins are not people, right? They have different needs than us as humans. And the natural thing, which also happens in design, is that we are trying to turn a goblin into a human. But goblins don't want to be human.
We all walked into the trap.
But that was probably the best exercise on empathy, getting yourself out of your head, out of thinking about the fact that whatever is being designed should be designed for people like us. And then the second exercise was to create a transformative experience for everybody in the castle, all the 70 people, perform it on stage in order to give everybody the experience that has been designed. The idea of Paul and Klaus, so the two guys who created the college, is to tear us from the daily selves, take away our professional masks of people attending a professional conference, and turn us into someone else. We are dressed up. We could sort of create our own personalities for those 4 days of the event. And suddenly, a number of things happened there. So one thing was that everybody got equal. There was nobody higher in the, you know, professional hierarchy or lower, nothing of that kind. And the second thing was that because of this silly dress up, you might think, there was no barrier to talk to each other. Everybody was talking to each other like from the first minute, really, because it was so weird. First of all, there was a subject. It was so weird that you could say like, hi, how do you feel about it?
It's like a permission to not be self. If you look at, you know, traditional carnivals, or if you look at any type of institutionalized events over long periods of time, they have those classic ingredients that you're just mentioning. For me, there's three words I remember from the second college. There's two words from the first one, noetic and ineffable, which is, you know, those are the two words I remember from college one. If you don't know what they mean, like the rest of the planet, we'll put the actual definition. Maybe we can do that later and add them to the bottom of your podcast. On the second college, I remember three words very clearly, Hardgrave memory, which is three words epically spoken by Aga at the conference, which was do not talk, right? And there was a pause between the do and the not talk part. It did startle, I think, Joe Pine and some other people in the room when she said those words. But to me, that was across all of the conversations, you know, that one observation that was blatantly obvious to me that I'd never seen that clearly was, when you're designing experiences, it's not about talking about the experience. It's about actually doing them. And this is where I think still fundamentally many events are broken, because many events actually talk, and at the end they do it once. In my head, I'm still racking myself to think about how can you test, how can you do instead of talk a lot, and then actually, you know, have rehearsals and tests of small increments of behavior change first prior to putting on the final execution of the event, which might then be the actual manifestation of the event. And my head is still trying to wrap itself around that. So thank you, Aga, for that deep set of words with the right pause behind the do, which in the idiom of the language might have startled some people, just kind of blew my mind on the spot. It was like a click moment. And it points back to your question, if I may, where you said, should all events be completely transformational all the time? I think no. I think if your events are just mind-blowing experiences back to back, it can be too much. If there's too much change or too much impulse going on in the event, if it's not tiered and timed in the right way for that specific person in that time and space, it can have zero impact, right? So however well it may have been designed, if the person is not ready for that experience, it will not work. And I think this is where the magic is in this. You know, there's gold dust in prepping people and disconnecting from the real world, getting them all in the same kind of zone. Then from there, building on that behavior change you're looking for in a way that's suitable for that group of people at that given time, which I think also makes the College of Extraordinary Experience in its third edition much more difficult, because you have people that have been twice before. You have people that have been once. You have people that have never been. And then have people that might not be going anymore.
Exactly. And Ruud, and I might be getting back to the basics again. You have the event happen and you use the magical things, and then there's a gap. A lot of conversations happening around, how do I keep momentum around this? And I'm not talking necessarily about selling more tickets for the next event. You're driving a transformation. You want some magic to happen. People walk out the event, and then sometimes most of the time, it just fizzles out. Is this something that you're and your collective is concerned about?
I think this is why owning an event is so daunting, and also why event ownership is broken or creation of events is broken. If you look at it as an isolated thing and the event is the thing that you're putting all your bets on and your wager on for it to happen, then you're in the wrong mindset. I think that all leaders that have done transformational change, or people that have gone through transformations, I think everybody is a transformationist, because you transform yourself all the time. The only thing is, you don't know how it's happened to you until you see it in hindsight, and you don't know what's going to happen to you. Because if I could have predicted the accident from last Sunday morning at 10:50, I would have preferred to it not happen. Yet, because of it, you learn things again. To come back to your point, I think one of the things that I keep seeing over and over again, which gets me very excited about what we're doing, is that every event is a blood sample of the health of the organization or of the group of people that you get together. You can now have an MRI of the event by looking at it much closer through multiple sets of eyes in 3D. To me, that's super exciting, because it means we're going to get better and better at orchestrating and creating transformational experiences, or designing experiences, or even just creating a small bit of incremental behavior change deliberately and with the right type of intent. Nobody on their deathbed thinks about more money or more cars or whatever it is. It's all about the time they spend with the people they care about. So the reflection at the end of your life, what I hear and read about other people, is about the amount of time that you spend on the things that matter and the amount of time that you'd spend on stuff that doesn't matter. If you can have even 1% of that transformation of that use of time done properly, and if you could start with events, that wouldn't be a bad place to start, because many people waste a lot of time at events. That's our little contribution to mankind. And, you know, we're trying to teach as many others to do what we do, because it's not rocket science, but it's really fun to do.
Yeah. I recently attended an event that I really love. It had some logistical problems, and then people started complaining. I felt for these people, because I know the effort that goes into an event, and then having the audience not happy. People put so much effort into events. They need to read the book, man.
And the book is only one starting point, right? But there's, if you open the book, Werner, maybe you can read out what it says on the opening page, because your accent sounds so much more impressive than my Dutch English.
Now I'm feeling nervous, like back in school again. To all events around the world, you are only as relevant as the people who participate, the need to fulfill, and the experience you bring. Challenge the norm. Make yourself matter.
Yes. Boom. I think if you think about your event that way, give your event a personality. Does your event matter to the world, or is it just more filling? It's like a good meal. Sometimes I prefer not to have a meal than to have a poor meal. You only have 3 meal moments a day, technically. Make it matter. The food needs to matter. If somebody that cares about what they cook and how they feed it to you, that's like the most basic need we have. Events are like that. It's us getting together. We have some meals together, and not just stale cookies. You want it to be special. As a result of the accident last week, I had a pis à la dière salad in Nice yesterday with my parents, with freshly grilled sardines over lunch. It was phenomenal. And because we had it together, it mattered. So that was an important moment.
In Poland, there's this flood of events happening, like especially around design, transformation, digital transformation and stuff like that. If you really put your mind to it, you could spend your whole year just going from one event to another. And I wonder how many of these events do actually inflict any change at all.
If you change nothing else about what your next event, I would encourage you to think about 5 roles that you could have when you go to the event. And we use them when we put our event design groups together. The first one is probably the most important one. It's called the timekeeper. How much time are you actually spending there, and how's the time being spent for the people that are there? And think about the facilitator. How is that thing being put on, and how is it designed to happen? You are one of the idea generators. What ideas do you bring to the table, or that you see have others in light bulb moments? There's one that I just lost the card for that's called the jester. What's the one question you do not dare to ask that might get you killed? Think about that one question when you're at that boring event. And the last one is called the blah, blah reducer. What would you do with whatever time you saved if you would carve out the blah, blah and use that other remaining time properly? Even if you're at a bad event, they're actually an inspiration for thinking about how could you make that event better. It's like going to a bad restaurant and thinking, if I became the owner of this restaurant, what would I do differently? Would I rearrange the chairs? Would I put the lighting differently? Would the entrance be somewhere else? What would the menu look like? And everybody has the power to change whatever they're at. But if you don't act, if you don't do anything about it, then you're in trouble. You have to change your behavior in order to change other people's behaviors. So by going to the event, you are the parasite. You're the one that's endorsing poor events. This is a call for anybody that goes to poor events, stop going.
How do you know which event to go to, Ruud?
I have no idea, Aga. I really don't. I'm on that continuous quest, right? So even the bad ones inspire me to make them better. Sometimes people are just lazy and don't want to think about their event design, and then they hire us, right? Or they think it's too complicated to think about it. They hire us to do it for them, which is great because it keeps me off the streets and it's inspiration for making sure that we have case studies and we can help them improve them, which is great. We prefer to go out and actually help their teams learn what we can do because their teams have the power in their head. All they have to do is extract it and use it effectively in the process.
Now, if you had to recommend a book to a friend, what would that be?
So I bought this for my daughter after the event in Indianapolis. It's called My Dear Hamilton. It's not a business book, but my daughter, who's turning 20, has an endless fascination for the Hamilton musical. She will get this from me very soon as a surprise for going to London and seeing the musical. But I need to understand what's fascinating for her. And the other must read, I think, for me is, let's say, the Mothership of the Experience books, which is, you know, the experience economy book that Joe Pyne put on, because he instigated a lot of the stuff that we're talking about here. You know, the layer of thinking many years ago that he laid out with Jim Gilmore is a fascinating framework to think about what we're talking about in this podcast. Yeah.
If you were to say, what is your mission statement in this world? What would it be?
Change the world one event at a time.
Excellent. And then I get to ask the last one. One thing for any event designer, and I would say any designer, that they need to always remember.
Claim time, claim team, claim space to design your event and spend 1% of your total event time thinking about event design.
Thank you so very much. It was fantastic talking to you.
And thank you very much for your time.
Werner Agar, I can't wait to be at the next event with you guys so we can, you know, get face to face and get these digital screens out of our ways. For the people that are listening, podcasts are pretty powerful ways to eavesdrop on conversations.
Amen to that. This was the Next Wave with Banner and my awesome co-host, Aga Shustek.
Thank you very much. And let's talk next time.